The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, all accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
I'm feeling beautiful.
You're feeling good today?
I look good.
You do look good.
Yeah, checked my hair in the mirror. And
looking good today. Yeah.
Do we have a mirror in this building?
I'm sure we do. You don't need to look in the mirror.
No,
you know
you're
looking good.
I could just tell.
What's going on, Brady? What's happening?
I'm mad at you.
What did I do now?
Oh, wow.
What did I do? Shock.
I am so mad at you.
What did I do this
because,
time?
So mad.
Because we have a playoff basketball game tonight.
Yes, I do. Yes, we do.
We have a group text message with all of our teammates.
Yes.
And you decided to send out a text message to the group at like 3:45.
Yes.
And so now
I was bored. I had nothing to do.
And now my phone is constantly, but there's a special place in hell for the person who starts the group message.
That is me.
Without any real reason for it. You just started the group message and now it's going off. I've got like my pants are just buzzing every 5 seconds.
That's not my problem.
All because of you.
I thought you were just happy to see me.
It's all because of you.
Are your pants buzzing or are you happy to see me?
You started the group message for no reason. There's a special place
in
hell for you.
Big game tonight. We got our YMCA playoff game.
It's just basketball, I assume.
Yeah. Well, if we lose, we're out of it. That's it. We're done there, Rich.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And you there's got to be another league.
Well, you want us to win because we play Trimboli's team after that.
Okay, so. You do. So I could see you get crushed.
Oh, yeah. Yes. We only lost by 8 to Trimboli's team.
Yes, we did.
And since I wasn't there, I scored 9 a game. So
Yeah, right.
That's the difference between winning and
you
losing.
You would have only lost by 7 if you had been there.
Our best player's not going to be there tonight, though, maybe.
Phil?
Yeah, Phil's not going to be there.
I'll just pick up the slack. I'm feeling.
You can't pick up the slack for Phil.
I'm feeling
good. He's our team leader.
I'm feeling good after yesterday's.
Filling in for Phil.
Did you like playing yesterday?
Yeah, I played. I felt good yesterday.
I don't know what's going on with everybody. First of all, it was crowded again last
night. That's because you have talked up Williston Central School so much that there's 110 people there.
Well, it's good
show. It's good that people are listening to that, but everybody's like just shooting like crazy. I wanted to punch people in the face. I'm like, what are
because
you doing?
Because they're shooting in basketball?
Well, without passing the ball to me is really what it comes
Why would they
to.
Pass to you?
They're not passing at all. They're not all passing to anything. Okay. They're just shoot. I'm like, what the hell? I wanted to scream. I really wanted to scream at some people.
Maybe they were trying to impress people by scoring
a lot. Who are they impressing? I really was getting on some people. I'm like, what are you doing? What's going on here?
We need truth serum right now.
Yeah.
You were on my team.
Yes, I was.
For the first 2 games.
Yes.
And then you
switched to another team.
Is that you didn't want to play with us anymore?
No, I had a chance to jump the line like 3 games. I didn't want to wait an extra half hour. So I got inside sources that could move me up the ladder there or give me a little, instead of waiting a half hour, I could wait like 5 minutes.
So what are you guys going to talk about to start the show when the season ends?
That we don't know. Pick up at Pomeroy Park?
No, I found a new men's league baseball team to play on.
Oh, great.
Wow.
Last year,
I want to play.
Last year, I commuted every weekend or so to go to Albany to play.
Did you find one in this town?
I've found a new team, it looks like, here. It's not a positive yet, but they've offered me a spot.
I don't like pickup baseball.
It's not pickup baseball. It's a real
league. Wow, look how mad he got. It's not pickup baseball.
Get the snow off the field in June, you'll be all set.
And does it go from June to July?
No, it goes from middle of May until September.
Wow.
End of August.
I would say I want to play, but I really don't. That's just a lie.
But everybody wants you to play.
Yeah, because I could.
Especially the pitching.
Yeah, so the ball can just come right back up at my noggin at like 80 miles an hour. I know that's what's going to happen to me. So anyway, we got our YMCA game tonight. By the way, you didn't use my last story standing.
Totally forgot about it.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I might as well use it now.
It was disgusting. I wouldn't even look at it.
You wouldn't even look at it.
No, I don't want to see that.
There's a drink you can order that comes with a frozen human toe.
I mean, why would you do that? He tried to show it to me.
I didn't read the article, but do you have to pay extra? I mean, no, I'm serious. Like, I'll have a drink without the toe is like $15, with the toes like $30.
Right,
I'm not even sure.
Look, please tell me you're changing and embellishing as you do with every story. This one.
No,
it's not I assume this was a one-shot deal, and it was a horrible mistake.
It says here, stiff drink, the cocktail that's made with a frozen human toe. I mean, did I misread that?
No. But it doesn't say it was a mistake? It has to be. No. Who's going to drink a toe?
Well, I guess people want it because I see them pouring one, and it has a picture of the toe. You wouldn't look at it.
No, I won't. Brady, would you look at a human toe in a drink? Why would we want to see
it? I don't know.
That?
And, you know, I just...
Disgusting.
It is disgusting, but is it like sewn off?
Especially your toes.
Yeah, exactly. I barely want them on my feet now. I don't want them in my drink, that's for sure.
I like it better when we talk about elbowing Trimboli in the head.
All right. So anyway, we do have a busy show. Lots going on this busy Thursday. You better write down the Town Fair Tire text line right now.
Anxious to hear from people.
Oh, you should be burning that up like we're giving away $100 bills today. 802-655-6672. What do we got coming up today and on the show?
Well, remember the mistake of the day. Someone's already tried to get me on that on the Town Fair Tire text line. Mistake of the day is brought to you by our friends at Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. We make a mistake, you text in. We get a qualifier at the end of each show. So the end of the week, we've got one qualifier per day, so five qualifiers, and the winner gets a brand spanking new baseball cap courtesy of Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms. And I have them in my office.
Somebody's already found the mistake.
Oh my gosh.
It's fixed.
Okay. I'm just telling you what the mistake is.
It's already fixed.
The Huddle podcast is missing?
The Huddle podcast is not missing. What was incorrect was last night's Champlain Valley game night was also labeled as the Huddle, so there were two shows on the Huddle tab.
But that's good. That means he's listening.
Yes.
Yes, and it means he's going to the website, which I like more. So I like that,
Thank you, Tristan.
So as for what's coming up on the show today, we've rearranged a few things guest-wise. So we were going to be joined by Eddie Garcia, Fox Sports NHL reporter, at 4:35. He is now going to join us in Champlain Valley game night at 6:05. So Eddie Garcia, NHL Talk, 6:05. At 4:35 now, former Major League infielder Desi Relliford spent 11 years
in Phillies, right?
Phillies,
Mariners.
Phillies, Mets, Mariners, Rockies, Rangers, Padres. Yeah,
really? Wow. I thought mostly he's a Philly, though.
Yes,
I guess
mainly as a Philly.
Me too.
Phillies, Mets, and he started a bunch of games for the Mariners and Royals towards the end. So,
bad teams.
So Desi Relliford is going to join us at 4:35. Guy who played the middle infield. He can give us some real perspective on the play last night that ignited the brawl we'll get to momentarily.
What play is that?
Yeah, something happened.
Steve Javy, former NBA official, 24 years NBA official. The stories he could tell, he'll join us at 5 o'clock. We know the Celtics opponent. Do we have an update on David Price's hand? Robert Kraft with a really nice gesture. But first, what do we make of the brawl last night? Here is how it sounded on Nesson on TV. This is what I was watching when I saw it, and most of you also.
Austin was that base runner at second base. Looked like he got a piece of Brock Holt. The bench is cleared after that. And that's why he gets drilled here, and he slams the bat. Now he's making a move, and here he comes on the run. And now fisticuffs as Kelly's being tackled and punches being thrown. The dugout's emptying. Here come the bullpens again. And this time it's for real. Unlike the last time, punches and tackles. Now we're going to see some ejections after this one.
And we did see some ejections.
Yankees, Red Sox, baby,
that's back.
I love it. I love it. Where do we want to start? Do you want to start with the slide? Is that?
Well, the slide's what started it all. Right. So really, I think there's two questions here. Yeah. One, did you think the slide was dirty? And two, even if you thought that, did you think Joe Kelly was warranted in throwing at Tyler Austin?
I thought the slide was dirty. I think people are going to let it slide because nobody got hurt on the play tremendously. There was like no broken leg or anything like that to get everybody outraged. But it was a slide like that is how people break their legs. It's a slide like that where you're coming in a little bit late. You're coming in really late, and you're coming in hard, too. And you're coming in spikes up. It's one thing to come in late, but when you're coming in spikes up, to go ahead and poke that and put those spikes right where the ankle is, you're coming in to injure somebody. That is your number one perspective when you do garbage like that. And plus, they weren't going to get the double play. So that's the only reason you do that is to purposely injure somebody.
Oh, well, good, because I agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, but the problem for me agreeing with you is everyone's going to go, oh, of course Rich agrees with him, the Red Sox homer. But I like to hear that.
I'm not a Red Sox homer.
No, you couldn't care less about either teams. Right. If it involved the Mets, you may be a little biased, but it didn't. So it's interesting to hear you say that. this was a gray area sort of one for me with Tyler Austin. I mean, I didn't like the fact that he sort of stuck out his – I thought the slide was late, but it wasn't real late. It wasn't Chase Utley late. We're not talking about that. But I didn't like the fact that he flipped his leg out and raised it right at the end. And I didn't like the fact that he did it on a force play. That was one thing that really bothered me.
Did not – the slide to me was not dirty at all. I do say I have a problem with it. I don't think the execution of the slide was dirty. I don't have a problem with when he slid. I don't have a problem with how he slid. But the execution of the slide was fine. But the you need to have some better self-awareness because, as you said about the force play, that's a perfectly legal slide to me when breaking up a double play. Mm-hmm. Brock Holt was in no position to have a double play there. He knows that the ball was bunted. Austin knows the ball was bunted. He knows there's no chance of a double play on that bunt. He also sees Holt not straddling the bag like he's trying to turn a double play. He sees him reaching out like a first baseman for a force play, so there's no point in taking him out there. I had no problem with the physical slide itself. I had a problem with the lack of awareness that Austin showed. He did not need a takeout slide there, but the slide itself, I did not find it.
So you didn't see spikes up in that replay?
Not egregious enough to be super annoyed about. I thought the and look, here's the kicker. Here's what proves to you that it wasn't a dirty slide. Major League Baseball has slide rules in place. Major League Baseball is looking to utilize those slide rules to keep the game safer. If it was that egregious of a slide, they would have called Tyler Wade out also, and it would have been an automatic double play. In that situation, you're out on the force out, and they penalize the dirty slide by calling the batter out too. But they didn't do that.
But that works both ways now. If you're going to say it wasn't as egregious, you know, either you're partly pregnant. Either you're pregnant or you're not. There's no that it wasn't that bad or that late of a slide. So
I did not think the slide was dirty.
Well, now go ahead and take it to where he got hit in the back of the pitch. He acted like he got hit in the head, okay? Now, you can't act like that where you take the bat and you throw it down. You got hit where you should have. Now, you want to get really mad? You're lucky he didn't throw it at his knees or go at his head. Then I would have really understood taking the bat and throwing it down. I thought he overreacted. You want to charge him out, that's fine. But I thought he overreacted because he got hit exactly where he should have gotten hit. I mean, what do you want to get hit in the tushy and make it nice and soft for you? Please.
Yeah, but when you got Nuke LaLoosh on the mound, I mean, you know, you have absolutely no idea. It could hit the mascot. It's just Wally Duck when Joe Kelly is throwing his fastballs. And my problem with it was it wasn't the first time that he threw a pitch at him. And that's, I know these are all massive unwritten rules, and you tell me, Mr. Pitcher, I mean, what's the rule on this? That to me, if you don't get him the first time and he didn't, then it's over.
Yes, it becomes then weak on Joe Kelly's part.
Haven't seen somebody throw more than one pitch at a guy after he didn't hit him the first time.
This is a gray area too, because I don't like what Joe Kelly did. You do not get two chances to hit the guy. He threw at him on the first pitch, and he moved his feet, and it was low one in, and he missed him. Then he threw at him again a couple of pitches later. That is weak. However, I do look at it bigger picture and say, I like that the Red Sox are sending a message.
Absolutely.
I like they're standing up for themselves. I like that the rivalry is back. I like that they're not taking any gruff from the Yankees. I think all of those things are good. The team is behind each other as opposed to last year with the Pedroia Machado stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not as fractured as it was last season. So I like all of that. But yes, you don't get two chances to throw at the guy.
Oh,
it's over.
Oh, my. I'm so disappointed at the listeners. I mean, Red Sox, Yankees throwing down. I know we got like two or three on the Town Fair Tire text line. We should have like 20 or 30. We should have like 200 or 300 because we have a lot of Red Sox fans, but we also have a lot of Yankee fans that listen to the show also. So 802-655-6672, 802-655-6672.
And, of course, you know I like to go right to the comments section. And and I went to ESPN thinking it would be somewhat balanced.
Right.
And I used that word
loosely. There's a lot of Yankee fans probably.
Because I thought there'd be a lot of Yankee fans. And sure enough, it is split directly down the middle. Yankee fans think it was a good slide. Yeah. Red Sox fans are calling it cheap.
Brady, read some of them. First one is a first-time texter. I don't even understand what it is.
No, he says if the umpires would have called the double play, if they would have...
Oh, said that because it's a late automatic double play.
Yes,
right.
If they would have said automatic double play, then I don't think Kelly throws at Tyler Austin, and we're not talking about it today. So basically, he's putting the blame on the umpires because they should have legislated it better.
You know what? I kind of agree with that. And so he's saying the slide was late also. So I kind of agree with that
also. It's not. He doesn't say the slide is late.
Why would the umpire?
We would presume that that's his thought. But he's saying if the umpires called it a double play, they said that's a late or that's a dirty slide. That's an illegal slide.
Right, right.
We're going to call Wade out also, and that's it. They think that would have legislated rather than having Kelly do it.
I totally agree on that one. What did Steve say?
Steve said that Austin slid through the base. He lost contact with the bag, so he should have just gone to first after Kelly's pitch hit him.
You mean,
yeah, well.
Basically, he's saying Austin was wrong. Yeah, take your medicine.
Okay. And does it matter that he's a nobody?
No, I because mean, Brock this, Holt is a nobody also
I,
for going
I,
that
I understand
way.
That. I understand that. But I didn't like the six-year-old slamming the bat down and then deciding to storm the mound. I didn't think it was his place to have that kind of a reaction.
No, I disagree.
That being said, what Kelly did was wrong by doing it on the second try.
I mean, if we're going by that standard, Austin is a minor leaguer. Holt is somebody that people don't even want on the roster, and now we're championing as this great Red Sox. So I don't. And Kelly putting his hand out saying, come get me, then that's childish also. So if we're going to go with childish reactions, right, it's childish on all sides of this.
Yeah, but don't you know Boston is in love all of a sudden? As much as we couldn't stand Joe Kelly after he blew game one, and you never know what you're going to get when he pitches, now everybody loves him because of that gesture.
Yeah, Brock Holt after the game was asked what he thought about the slide.
I don't think it was intentional. I think he was going in hard. It was a bunt. I'm not going to turn a double play on that play, especially with Wade running. So we're trying to get the lead out. I think he was just going in hard. But he went in hard a little late and with the spikes up. So it happened, and we'll move on.
So Holt doesn't take a whole lot of exception to it after the game. He said he thinks he overreacted in the moment. So that's another thing that tells me this middle infielder who got hit doesn't think it's that bad.
You know, it's too bad that he came up to bat. And usually I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. Now we're going to get revenge. It's too bad. You know why? Because if he doesn't come up to bat, you know what I do then? I start throwing at Judge and Stanton. See how much they like that,
That's what happened in the Rockies-Padres game.
And that's the other thing. Austin was up once before, and they didn't throw at him.
Right, but my thing is this. When somebody hits a home run, the next guy up sometimes takes the punishment. Yep. All right, you know what? I would have thrown it Stanton and Judge. See how much they would have liked that. See how much, you want to take out one of my players. All right, let me throw at your two big guns there and see how much you're going to like that. Boy, that would have really started some fireworks.
Well,
about
the fact that Holt was involved in this, did seems strange to you that the bench is emptied immediately when the two of them, it didn't seem like they were ready to land blows with each other. They're seemingly fairly calm guys.
Well, no, it was the reaction.
But it just seemed like immediately everybody ran out on the field.
Did you think he was overreacting when he got hit in the back like that? Do you think that was like a overreaction?
Well, I thought the bat slam was.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I mean, come on. Either drop the bat and run. First of all, you knew what was coming, okay, big boy? Drop the bat and go out. Don't give me the overreaction on that.
And
that's what he did.
Christian Vasquez wanted it to happen because Christian Vasquez should have protected his pitcher in theory. He was giving Austin a chance to go after him so that Kelly and them could throw down.
He just got a piece of his shirt just as he got to Kelly.
Yeah, he knew what was happening.
Absolutely.
By the way, I'm just assuming you don't want to get into a fight with Judge. Who's the big badass on the Reds? I used to be Poppy. You didn't want to mess with that guy, but
really
that's
isn't one.
There's
I don't think there's anybody on the Red Sox that I would say I wouldn't really want to mess with.
Well, I'm just saying Judge because of his height, but
see that other thing is I don't look at I think JD Martinez is too. I don't see JD Martinez
as a
fighter.
No, I don't. He's a tough guy. Yeah, you saw
Mookie Betts just jog in about as slow as possible. He's not getting into it. Jackie Bradley seems too nice to throw down.
Sale was one of the first. Don't get hurt.
I don't think he's tough, but I think he would have been. Well, no, because Pedroia, and he kind of backed down last year. Remember
Pedroia? If he was involved in it, he would have been a dirt dog.
When Pedroia gets angry, I could see. Yeah, him
I could see. Right, that's what.
Turning into Trot Nixon, Veritek.
You know who I don't want to see pitch today is Tommy Canely. Because Canely, I heard they said he got ejected, but then nothing listed him as ejected. So I got to even figure out what happened to Canely, the Yankees reliever. I played against Canely my whole life growing up. He is a hothead. Whether he was ejected last night officially or not, he was steaming, and he was one of the last guys removed from the pile. He's a guy who would take things into his own hands. So I hope that Canely doesn't play today.
All right. What if Holt tears his ACL? on that play. Do you feel differently about going after the hitter who caused it?
Yes, but he didn't.
But I mean
so yeah, it's the whole thing is you can't even make that comparison. The Chase Utley slide was only made out to be as bad as it was because Ruben Tejada broke.
Well, it was still a bad slide. We looked at it again before.
Way out of line.
He was
out
of line on that. Yeah.
But if Ruben Tejada doesn't break his leg,
it's not as famous.
People are looking at it and saying, "That's how baseball was played in the '70s, boys."
Right, right.
That's what it was like when I
grew
up.
Well, it's still a dirty play, but we would just say you're a dirty player.
Well, the Chase Utley play was a hell of a lot more dirty than that one last night at second.
Yes, but I'm saying that the result of the play made it seem far worse than it actually was. And if Brock Holt tore his ACL, yes, I'd have a different tune because we'd all have a different tune.
I guarantee you if I said the Chase Utley play and there had been no injury on that play, nobody would know what I was talking about.
The funny part is we all always had to say before the show was, what about Chase? And you made, like, 2 seconds you had the video up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all I would say, Chase Utley play, like you said, Rich, and everybody knows about that because of the broken leg. But that was a playoff game, so that was the problem there. All right, we're off and running. Town Fair Tire, text line 802-655-6672. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, we'll talk more about this incident. Can we expect payback today? Somebody we know thinks there will be.
All right, that's next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Studies show that listening to 101.3 ESPN makes you more productive. And we'll prove it when we get around to it. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. A busy Thursday, of course. We'll have the Red Sox-Yankees, 6:25 with the pregame, 7:05 with the start.
Round three.
I love it.
And we're so busy today because of this that we've got to cancel Big Deal, Little Deal, No Deal today.
Yes, we had to put that on hold. Jamie and Waterbury, I don't think anybody wants to be throwing at guys at the size of Judge or Stanton. Now, there's pretty big boys on the Red Sox, too. You know, not at those size, but, you know.
Not Judge.
No, not Judge's side. There's nobody on Judge's
side. Judge grab Kelly and just sort of escort him to the dugout?
Yes, he was the peacemaker.
If you're a Yankee fan, you like seeing Judge in the, right in the middle of the thing?
He was a peacemaker. He didn't do anything.
I know, but what, though? He could get popped real easy.
Right. No more than I liked seeing Chris Sale in the middle of things last night. It's like, come on, you're our only guy now that Price appears to suddenly have a random injury.
Ty was like, forget about the fight. How about that the Yankees batters, especially Sanchez, decides to go off on the pitchers there for the Red Sox?
Yeah.
That wasn't a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, Sanchez, what did he do? I think he put 60 points on his batting average.
I was going to say he had more hits yesterday than he had all season.
Yeah, literally. I think he had two coming in. He had three last night, all extra base hits. Geez. Yeah, that was there's no question. That was a statement night for the Bronx Bombers, no doubt, because as I said yesterday, the one thing they had to avoid here was a sweep.
All right, Brady, we getting a little payback? Is that what we're going to get round three? Is that, do you count yesterday, or is that just round one yesterday?
I don't know if we're going to get payback today, but Buster Olney was on Golic and Wingo today. He thinks there's payback coming.
I don't think it's going to end. I think that, you know, all it takes is one player, and the Yankee player saw how upset that Tyler Austin was when he got hurt, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, if you have a player in your clubhouse who thinks that he has grievances that need to be addressed and other players will step up and do those, and they've got 17 more games left this year.
So Buster thinks something's happening at some point. I don't think anything happens tonight.
Do the starters dictate, you think, that something happens or something doesn't happen because it's Sonny Gray and Rick Porcello? But I get a feeling if it was Sale on the mound, I'd be more inclined to think something was going to happen, or would something be less inclined to happen because he's the big ace. I'm not even sure anymore.
If I'm a Sox fan, I don't want Sale out there throwing the ball at anyone with teams already being warned before
but
the first pitch
attitude,
is even thrown.
Yeah,
but I don't want Sale jeopardizing his ability to stay in the game by purposely hitting a guy.
All you have to do is look at last year. He threw behind Machado. That's what happened last year. So Sale's already done it. Yes, I think who the starter is matters. I don't see that from Sonny Gray. He doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. Who does strike me as that guy is who I said was Tommy Cainley, the reliever, because he was the one who was so in the middle of it yesterday. I hope he doesn't pitch today. I think the Yankees will retaliate. I don't think it will be tonight. I think they will do it when they are home because they want their fans getting riled up by
it. In a lot of ways, I think baseball and brawls can be like hockey and brawls. The game and how it's going dictates a lot of
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah.
A lot of times when your team in hockey gets down 3-0, somebody purposely starts a fight. If you're in a 1-1 battle in the eighth inning or whatever, you're not going to purposely hit a guy and put a base runner on.
Plus, the way they're Rick Porcello, I mean, he's 2-0. You don't want to.
Well,
you
for
don't
now.
Want, well, I mean, you don't. You want that go as smooth as possible.
Yeah. Porcello wouldn't do anything.
No.
The Red Sox
right,
have already
that.
Sent their
right.
Shot.
No, but I'm just saying, you. If Sonny Gray was 2-0 with an ERA of 2.60, the I could say, you know what, Sonny, just keep moving along. We'll worry about the payback later on in the game when you're not in there. You don't want to interrupt anything. You know what I'm saying? It depends what the record is of the starting pitchers.
There's two ways that this can go. If Sonny Gray is going to do something, he's going to throw at somebody in the first inning. He's going to get two outs and throw at Hanley. He's going to throw at Betts to start the game. I don't. That's one way that it goes, although you don't like putting the leadoff man.
No, I just think that's dangerous.
That's one way that it goes. And the other way is that you hope the game then goes close because, as you said, you're not going to throw at somebody and put on in a close, in a 5-4 game in the eighth. But if it's 10-1, then all bets are
off.
If
Sonny Gray throws at somebody in the first inning, doesn't he get thrown out because they've both been
yes.
won before the game?
So that's why.
Right. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's why you don't do that. But if he does, then he's going to be thrown out. He's going to get suspended.
And
just like
and you're setting the pace for the whole game.
Just like Joe Kelly's going to be suspended.
How many games is he going to be suspended about?
He's probably going to be suspended for 5 games.
I was going to say 3.
It's probably going to be 5.
For retaliation.
I mean, obviously, he's never going to say, you know what? You're right. I hit him on purpose. Of course he hit him on purpose. He was doing everything in his power to hit him.
I love it.
But he can't say he hit him because then he gets 20 instead of 5.
Tom Fair Tire, text line 802-655-6672. Arnie made a mistake. He didn't lock out Arnie out of the studio.
No, Brady made a mistake.
Oh, Brady made a mistake. He didn't lock Arnie out of the studio today. There's no lock on the studio today.
Tough crowd.
It's a very tough crowd. That's Tim and Virgens out there getting that in. We have not made any mistakes. But I think we're going to see a little excitement tonight. I think we're going to see a little fireworks tonight. I'm going to be excited to see that.
So. I don't think so, and I hope not. I think the Yankees will do something eventually, but I think they'll do it on their home turf.
All right, let's get to a little Celtics also because we got game one of the NBA playoffs. Looking forward to this.
Well, on Sunday.
I know, but I'm just excited about the NBA playoffs more so than anything.
I might have been the only person who sat there and watched that game last night against Brooklyn. I didn't even know who half the Celtics team was.
No, the guys I was playing ball with last night, they totally were into it. They're like, what's the score of the Denver game? They were totally getting into it and what was going to, you know, who they were going to play.
Yeah, I was interested in the Denver game. I watched a little bit of that. I also watched a lot of Portland and Utah to see who would get the 3 seed in the West. But I don't love this matchup for the Celtics. They're playing Milwaukee. And I know people think Milwaukee is an okay matchup. I think Miami would have been the best matchup for them, and somehow they jumped up to the 6 seed. But Milwaukee with Giannis Antetokounmpo, that scares me with just his athleticism. Then you throw in Chris Middleton, and you throw in Jabari Parker, and you throw in Eric Bledsoe, who they got for these moments. Yep. They're a scary team. I think any matchup would have scared me with how depleted the Celtics are at this point. But Milwaukee scares me too.
I think the Celtics are going to win this series, but I think it's going to be a root canal. I mean, obviously missing the two guys they're missing. Well, 3. It doesn't sound like Smart's going to be ready for game one either. I don't want to be down the middle here. I'll take the Celtics in 7, but I think this could be it wouldn't surprise me if Milwaukee won it in 5 or 6.
I was just about to say this could be a series that goes 7. I mean, how crazy is that? We went Celtics went from possibly going to the NBA championship to now where it's going to be a struggle to get out of that opening round. Yeah. And you know what? It didn't even make a difference who they're going to play. I mean, if they do get out of the first round, I think it ends there, depending on the matchup. But, Milwaukee, it's going to be a good series. At least I think it's going to be a good series. If anything, I think maybe Milwaukee will have the advantage because of, you know, all the injuries that the Celtics are going through. But I'm going to go with the Celtics, who, by the way, according to Vegas, has like a 70-something chance of winning the series. That's insane. 75 or something like that.
The ESPN BPI, the Basketball Power Index, has them at 78.
Wow.
So, crazy.
One of the things I just – and real quick, because we do have to go to break because Desi Relaford's waiting.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have noticed, or I have observed, rather, is that the Eastern Conference doesn't look like the pushover that it's always looked. When I look at Washington being an 8 seed – they were a top 4 seed last year with essentially the exact same roster. The fact that they could go from 4 to 8, and I know John Wall missed, you know, a significant amount of time during the year. But that tells me this conference has a lot more depth than it's had.
And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the emergence, finally, of the Philadelphia 76ers. They look very legit. They put up 80 against the Bucks last night.
In the first half.
In the first half. Let me emphasize that part of it, yes.
Desi's next. Desi Relaford. Stick around for that. Coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The NFL draft is 13 days away. Rosen, Darnold, Allen. We've heard enough about the QBs. Friday, we lower our pad level and talk to a potential first-rounder who recently visited the Patriots. Golic and Wingo. Friday, 6 Eastern. ESPN Radio. ESPN News.
Everyone is listening to The Huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month. All right. This is The Huddle with Rich Hardy and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back here in The Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Game 3, the finale of this volatile Yankees-Red Sox series to tonight. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:25. We say volatile because of yesterday's fireworks. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and talk with a guy who's going to know this better than any of us. It's 11-year MLB veteran, played with the Royals, with the Mets, with the Phillies, with my Mariners for a stretch. Middle infielder Desi Relaford. Desi, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brady, man. How about yourself?
Well, as well. And Desi, everybody up here fired up. We got a lot of Red Sox fans. We got a lot of Yankees fans, a lot of people on both sides of this. Let's start with this. What did you make of the slide by Tyler Austin? Because that's what set all this in motion.
I mean, based on today's standards, with them having to slide straight into the back, I thought it was a little, you know, illegal, I guess. I think because you're supposed to slide straight into the back. Now, when I played, guys could take you out, and that wasn't a problem. The only thing I had a problem with as a middle infielder is he went in spikes up. He went in spikes up. I mean, if his spikes are down, it's no big deal, but spikes up, you know, you can hurt somebody, and it's commonly known as a dirty play. So the shortstop, he had every right to say something, at least address it. And then, the runner, I guess he took, he didn't like what was said, and everything took off after that.
There's a lot of rules in the unwritten rule book, and usually I'm a fan of the unwritten rules. I played the game for a long time, too. But let me ask you, what makes a dirty slide? Because there's a lot of different variations of a dirty slide.
Yeah, there are. And what I said what made that dirty, in my perspective, was the fact that he went spikes up. I mean, when your spikes are up, I mean, you can do damage. I mean, you're running in; those spikes are sharp, you know. So it's dirty to have the spikes up, and I mean, he cleated them, and his spikes are up, and you know, I thought he deserved to get beamed.
Now, I'll play devil's advocate and ask you this: with the way the rules are now, they're looking that they'll bang the batter also and make it an automatic double play, but they didn't do that. So it seemed to me like the umps didn't take this to be a dirty slide, because if they had, they would have called the runner Wade out also.
I understand that. They didn't call anything, but from what I saw, the spikes went up, and that's something that maybe only the runner and the infielder know. You know, it's something that it's at the speed, game speed, very tough to see. So, it just looks like there's some contact, which is no big deal. I mean, I've had way worse contact than that. So, at game speed, it didn't look, you know, it didn't look very innocent. But when you slow it down, you see spikes up. He catches them around, I don't know, mid to low leg, like below the knee, but middle of the leg, below the knee. And I don't know. I would have had something to say as a middle infielder, if not worse. So I think it was cool that his pitcher had his back and drilled him. And that should have been it. I mean, the guy going in, he knows he went spikes up, and you have to expect something. That's the way the game's played, and that's how you kind of control the game. But there's a lot of different ways to go in dirty. Nowadays, it seems like anything is dirty because, you know, I guess the rule says you're supposed to slide straight into the back.
Desi, what offends you more, a guy who goes out of the baseline to take you out, the guy who goes in spikes up, or the guy who goes in late?
For me, I think it's the guy who goes in late, because that's the one you have the highest percentage of getting hurt on, because you know you're catching a lot of body, and who knows how you're planting your foot or you know how you're setting up. And sometimes if a guy comes in late, it's not even really a slide. You know, it's more of kind of like a body kind of a tackle. You know, you can get hurt. You know, you can alter or end careers that way. Whereas, you know, if a guy goes in spikes high, like something like yesterday, although it seemed, you know, pretty inconspicuous, you know, you slash and get a gash in your calf or something else. You can miss time. It's painful at the, you know, you got to play with extra pain at a minimum. So, you know, if I had to rank them, you know, I guess going in late would be the worst.
Former Major League infielder Desi Relaford with us. He played for the Padres. He played for the Royals. He played for the Phillies. He played for the Rangers. He played for the Rockies, the Mets, the Mariners. He's here with us on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. So you said you liked that Joe Kelly had Brock Holt's back. Do you go to the pitcher and say, hey, you better throw at this guy, or does he do it on his own? How does that work?
You know, I think that depends on the player and kind of the team. If you have a player that nobody really likes on the team, no one's going to do anything. A pitcher's not even going to have your back. But if you're a good teammate and you might have a dog on the mound who's like, yo, what happened? I got your back, without even questioning. Or you may have to mention it. He may not have seen it. And you go and mention it. Hey, you know, this guy spiked me. I think he deserves it. And that could be on how you feel that day, or if you thought there was some kind of malintent behind it or whatever. Then it also depends on the pitchers. Like, a lot of pitchers are scared to hit guys. So it was a perfect situation. I guess maybe there could be something in the past between those guys that made him, you know, go ahead and up the ante a little bit. Or, you know, maybe what happened yesterday was enough. And I guess in my eyes, I thought what happened yesterday was enough to warrant him getting beamed, and that should have been the end of it.
Desi, I'll ask you this then also. The unwritten rule book, as we said, is very, very thick. And look, I'm a former pitcher who's thrown at guys, and kind of the pitcher's unwritten rule book is that you get one shot to hit the guy, and if you miss him, then that's it. Joe Kelly threw at him earlier in the at-bat and missed him, and then threw at him again. How do you feel about that? Because I don't like taking two shots at him.
You're right. That's another unwritten Nike. Now, if you miss, I don't know. I think there might be a two pitch limit. I think you might be able to get two pitches. You know, the way. But if you're up there and you've missed a guy three or four times, then you can't do it. I remember one time when I was in Philly, Vladimir Guerrero came in the last season. It was the last series of the season. He came in with like 37 home runs, and he ended up with 41. Anyway, on his 40th home run, I mean, it was a wall scraper, oppo, like it literally barely went out. And he stood at home plate, and he didn't start running until the ball hit the ground. And, it was crazy. So everybody was, we were yelling, you know, the bench was on him, whatever, whatever. So we know, you know, next day, they took him out of the game that day. All right, so the next day's up, and everybody knows we're going to hit him. Our pitcher, he threw like two balls. You know, everybody's anticipating this. I mean, they even know what's going to happen. He threw two balls that he barely even had to move his feet on. He had to, you know, kind of scooch back a little bit, scooch back twice, and I'm out of shortstop just like, what in the world is going on? Like, and then, you know, now it's like, okay, I can't do it now. I've missed him two, three times, and then the next pitch, wham, he hits number 41. I almost enjoyed it at that point because the pitcher was such an idiot. Like, you know, and then they hit him the next time, and I thought we were so foul for hitting him. You can't hit him for hitting a home run after you tried to get him. So there's all kind of rules, man. But I don't know. What do you think about it? I mean, do you feel like that it was unwarranted?
I didn't think that the slide itself was dirty, but I felt that it was unnecessary because it was a bunt. They weren't going to turn a double play, and at that point, Holt was positioned like a first baseman, so there's no point in taking him out. I didn't think the slide was dirty if there was a double play on the line, but since there wasn't, I felt it was unnecessary, if that makes sense.
No, I get it. I get it. And like I said, it wasn't like it was crazy dirty, but just watch the angle of his feet and like, it was like his whole foot, like it just spikes up. Like, yo, keep your spikes down and slide in and we're good. Like, it's no big deal. Like, you can knock me into left field. But when you like, okay, I'm going to unsheath my weapon, you know what I'm saying, as I'm coming into second base, like that makes it a little more personal and potentially dangerous. So,
Desi, how many brawls were you in the majors?
Oh, man. I can't really say that I was in any brawls. that, like, where we were, you know, people, there was, you know, multiple fights where people were throwing haymakers and having to do that. More of that happened in the minor leagues. We had some bench clearing situations. I remember one in particular where Ricky Botalico hit Barry Bonds, and Barry charged him, you know, and, like, they just kind of wrestled around, and it was no big deal because there wasn't really any bad blood between the teams. It was just kind of them two, their two things. So it was like, whatever. So I didn't really, and I'm kind of lucky, man. Like, those things are scary. Like, the first one I got into, I was in the minor. I was 18 years old in A-ball, and all these grown men were out there trying to kill each other. And I wanted nothing. I didn't want anything to do with it.
Desi Relaford, 11-year veteran with the Phillies, the Padres, Mets, Mariners, Royals, Rangers, middle infielder with us here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Desi, you have told me this story before at my former employer, but I don't think we've brought it to this audience yet, so I'm going to ask you for your last question. Please, to just share the story of you getting to pitch in the major leagues for Bobby Valentine and the Mets.
Yeah, man. And to this day, that is my major league highlight. Yeah. You know, even though I played for 11 years and, you know, did some other things, but that was, to me, was my highlight. I had the opportunity. I'd been wanting to pitch for the longest time, you know, my whole career, because I pitched all the way up until I got to pro ball, but no one would ever give me a chance, you know, because, you know, I was a prospect, or they didn't want me to get hurt, or this or that. But, you know, I bided my time. I'm no longer a prospect. They didn't care if I got hurt. And so Bobby, he came down. We were getting throttled. It was like 15-3 by San Diego. Bobby came down to the end of the bench. He asked, came to ask me if I, you know, when's the last time you pitched? I said it was 10 years ago, but, you know, I work on my stuff every day. And I wasn't lying. Because I did, like, when I played catch, I had developed a changeup, you know what I'm saying? I was like, I was, you know, I had some pretty good stuff playing catch. But he was like, I don't know. And then he went to Todd Zeal and asked Todd if he pitched. And Todd was like, hey, I could get out there and throw some knuckleballs or whatever. And I grabbed Bobby, like, literally grabbed his shoulders and looked him in his face. I was like, dude, you can't let this guy pitch. Like, don't let him pitch. Like, I was hating. I was like, dude, I was like, I can throw. He's like, Desi, I don't need anybody getting hurt. I was like, Bobby, I'm fine. Like, I know how to throw a baseball. So he's like, all right, man, go ahead and get loose. And so I literally sprinted down to the bullpen. And when I walked through the bullpen catcher and I were really cool. Dave Racanello, I want to say shout out to Dave Rack. When I came through the cage, he was like, yo, his eyes lit up because him and I had talked about me pitching and I wanted to pitch forever. So I get in the bullpen, I'm throwing, warming up, everything's working. I'm throwing stuff that I don't even have, and it's working, you know what I'm saying, making up it. So I get in the game, and I actually did really well. You know, I had a 1-2-3 inning, you know what I'm saying? I ended up, I think I touched 92-93 on the gun that day, had a couple swings and misses, had a strikeout. I had a standing ovation in a 15-3 blowout. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was amazing. Like, it was one of the best games of my life. I think I had like 2-for-4 that game with a couple of doubles, and then, you know, I pitched a scoreless ninth. So it was all that I guess I could imagine it to have been, and my big league highlight.
Well, I've heard the story before. I'm still smiling. Our intern is in the corner rolling on the ground laughing at the story. So Desi Relaford, 11-year veteran, played with the Phillies. He played with the Padres, the Rangers, the Royals, the Rockies, the Mets, and the Mariners with us here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Desi, thank you for the time. The perspective is always. Love having you on. We'll do it again.
All right, Brady, man. Appreciate you having me. You guys have a great day.
It seems like a fun guy. He was laughing a couple of times, you know what I mean?
And he's asking you questions. He's interviewing the interviewer.
Yeah, he's one of my... Cool.
I never thought...
Clayton and Chubbard said that was an awesome interview. Yeah. So he obviously liked listening to Desi Relaford. I didn't know he had played for so many teams, but he did sound like a fun guy, you know what I mean?
He's a great guy. I met him personally at the Cooperstown Hall of Fame Classic when I was the bullpen catcher at that. He and I talked very briefly, but I was able to get his phone number and had him on a couple times. Had him on once in Albany. We had him on once here last year. had him on once this year. His story about pitching in a blowout game and hitting 93 miles an hour was great. His story about Vlad Guerrero getting thrown at and missed and then hitting a homer was great. And, yeah, just an all-around great guy.
That's a book waiting to happen, that guy right there.
What's coming up at Champaign Valley game night tonight?
Well, Eddie Garcia is going to join us. He's Fox Sports' NHL reporter. He'll get us ready for Bruins and Maple Leafs, and he'll recap a little bit what happened last night.
All right, we'll finish out the hour with Clean Up Your Act. A couple of good ones there, so we'll get that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Time for Clean Up Your Act. I'm going to start this off. This is the PC police saying you need to clean up your act. I'm not necessarily saying this guy needs to clean up his act. I just saw this story, and I'm like, I've got to get this because a play-by-play announcer, and this is you, Rich, a play-by-play announcer. Matter of fact, the Oklahoma City, did you guys hear this story? The Oklahoma City play-by-play announcer?
Nope. No.
Brian Davis? I guess they said he used offensive and inappropriate words when describing the action Wednesday when he was talking about Russell Westbrook. I guess Russell Westbrook did something very spectacular, you know, like a dunk or something.
Maybe 20 rebounds last night.
And, you know, in order to praise him, he said, "Are you out of your cotton picking mind?" Oh, there goes Richard.
No, but that's a very common phrase our day, Arnie, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, I understand that, but...
Oklahoma said he said, "We think obviously the use of the term was offensive and inappropriate. I expressed that to Brian last night." That was the Thunder vice president. Brian assures me that it was not meant in any derogatory way. He apologizes, but again, we feel strongly that it's inappropriate and offensive.
I get it, but that's a generational one.
It is. That's why I said I don't know necessarily me, but the PC police. Right. Cotton picking mind is a, as you mentioned, a long time. We've heard our parents.
Thousands. That was a very common
phrase.
Anyway,
so I just wanted to throw that out there. Anyway, you have one, bro.
My name's Rich, and I have
one. Your name is Rich.
Clean up your act, the Miami Marlins, who lost to the Mets last night 4-1. They were outdrawn by their AA affiliate, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp.
Oh, the Jumbo Shrimp.
a Major League Baseball team was outdrawn for a game against the Mets.
Yeah.
Well, by something called the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp.
What is it, Forrest Gump, their mascot or something?
Can you imagine? How is that possible? And the other thing about them is they're playing all these marquee teams to open their home season. Cubs, Red Sox, the Red Hot Mets. And everybody apparently that was in the crowd of 6,100 last night was Mets fans.
Yeah, well, jeez. If you don't deserve it, Derek Jeter. You don't deserve it. Speaking of New York and blue and orange, clean up your act, the New York Knicks, they have fired Jeff Hornacek. I don't care that they fired Jeff Hornacek. I feel bad for him, but they're 60-104 under him, the sixth worst record in the NBA over that stretch. I believe it's the 11th head coach now for the Knicks since 2001. So the Knicks, please clean up your act. Yeah. You see what basketball's better when the Sixers are good, when the Celtics are good, and when the Lakers are relevant. Clean up your act and
the
get
Knicks
there, too.
And the Knicks, too. Hour one of the books, Brady's going to come back, have a Sports Center update. We'll get you ready for Steve Javi, 24-year NBA ref. All that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in, and the Huddle when you drive home. And you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. It is a Thursday.
Yes.
Week is just flying on by for crying out loud.
It is.
I love it. Before you know it, we'll be getting into football season. I don't want to jump the gun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I looking forward to that?
Do realize it's Christmas
April,
today.
April, May, June, July, August. Five more months.
Today is the NHL play. Well, it started last night.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is it.
This is what you live for.
Absolutely.
The NHL.
You don't use Twitter very often, so it's easy to go back and look at your tweets, but you tweeted on opening day that it was Christmas.
Yes, there's several Christmases all within the same part of the year.
Oh, okay. You can't have Christmas twice now. Yeah.
I don't have to buy a million presents for this one.
Yes,
I just have to sit back and watch my Bruins hopefully do well. Should be interesting series.
Brady, did anybody get us on the mistake of the day yet? You know, ever since we introduced it, they were all over it on the first day, and not a lot of mistakes after that.
That's because we're just so perfect.
Yes, well, Cody, I am perfect.
Cody in Plattsburgh was the qualifier on Monday. Aaron in Bridport was the qualifier on Tuesday. I got to go back and look at our records and see who the qualifier on Wednesday was.
I just said April 12th is Christmas. I believe that qualifies for a very easy text.
That's
right.
Yeah, that's not a mistake.
Because that's hyperbole.
Yeah, that's not a mistake.
The mistake of the day, remember, brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right every time. And you will also, if you do have the mistake of the day, you can qualify. So we'll have one qualifier from every day. So we'll have five qualifiers per week. And the winner at the end of the week is a brand spanking new baseball cap.
Yes, and we have our baseball cap. And don't come up to me, oh, that is so cool, could I have one? Because the answer is no. You can win one, but I'm not going to give you the one that I'm going to be wearing because everybody always asks me for my stuff. And
why?
I like this. I don't know why.
Why would anyone want something that's been on your head?
I know, because I'm bald, so they don't, you know, you're not going to get anything. But I'm telling you, these are cooler.
They are
nice. What.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
103 awesome. ESPN so, baseball caps.
But I better not wear them in the gym because Brady hates that.
No, but I will say this again. The worst is, like, the guy on my team yesterday in basketball.
Yeah.
This should be a rule. And people I know will side with me on this on the Town Fair Tire text line. If you are wearing sweatpants.
The guy took off his sweatpants when he played, though.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Because I got into a fight with him and he was wearing shorts.
He played in wind pants. We're talking about a different guy then.
No, because he the blue sweats.
No, the guy who was on our team in the first game.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the guy that came late because he was wearing sweats too and he took them off.
Right. I'm talking about the guy on our team.
Oh, okay.
We had a guy.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Okay.
We had a guy on our team yesterday.
Yeah.
If you're wearing sweatpants and pickup basketball, don't play pickup basketball. If you're wearing sweatpants in basketball, you don't belong on the court.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yes.
The fat kid.
No.
No, okay, not the fat kid. My bad.
He's just going to keep throwing out body parts until one's right.
If you are wearing sweatpants on the basketball court, do not go on the basketball court.
Oh,
you'll
I
do
love
yourself
it.
Better.
I love it. All right, Brady.
Never heard that.
Introduce our next guest. Go ahead, tell him he's coming up.
Yeah, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. NBA playoffs are going to start this weekend. It took us all season long and all the way into the last game of the regular season to know the Celtics opponent. They're going to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. So it is an exciting time of year. And a guy who knows more about the playoffs than any of us is longtime NBA official Steve Javy. 24 years an NBA official, 1,500 regular season games, 200-plus postseason games, and 20 NBA finals games. He's with us on the phone now. Steve Javy, thank you for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brady. Exciting time of year, the playoffs coming up.
Well, very exciting. You reffed over 1,500 NBA games, 20 NBA finals games. How the heck did you decide you wanted to be an NBA ref?
Well, I tell you one thing. I was kind of sadistic, I guess, when I was young and just like to be yelled at.
Yeah.
I don't know. But actually, it was in my family's bloodlines. My father was an NFL official for 30 years and officiated 4 Super Bowls. And my godfather was an American League umpire. So, growing up, I had these two mentors in my life that I don't think I really consciously wanted to be an official. I was a baseball player, wanted to be a baseball player. But after my playing days were over, looking for work, I think the next best thing of playing was officiating for me. And that's how I got into it.
How difficult is it to be an official at the professional level, from the conditioning to the mental strength to the travel? How tough is it?
Yeah, Brady, you know, the last part you just said, to travel. I mean, everybody looks at it as a glamorous life and so on, but we're basically gypsies just taking our bags from one city to another. Now, that's not to say that we don't enjoy our sport and our profession and our craft. We really do. There's no doubt. Traveling is the toughest part, but it's difficult because it's not only just the games itself, which seem to be year after year. Even now when I'm with ESPN and ABC doing analyst work, I just look and I'm just amazed at the amount of calls they get called correctly, because the game, even since I've left the game, the court has gotten quicker and even more difficult to officiate. But all the other things, like you said, about traveling, you know, you're doing like 3-4 games in 5 nights, and it's tough, and you're away from your family. So It's rewarding, it's fun, but there's also some of those drawbacks too.
You mentioned rewarding and fun. What were some of the best experiences that being an NBA ref gave you?
You know, I the best experiences probably are the people that I've met along the way. Not only the fraternity of officials, which my wife even says, you know what, I've really never met a bad guy who was an official. Even everybody would like to differ, you know, differs in their opinions on us. It's a good bunch of men. It's a close group, a bunch of men, like a fraternity, you'd say, Brady. And it's just the camaraderie. I guess very smart guys are playing at the professional level or collegiate level, and they have their team in their locker room. Well, we have our team, too, which is the third team on the floor. And it's really a close-knit bunch of guys. But also, in the traveling around the country and around the world, different people that you meet. I've met so many nice people, say, in the airports and hotels and, you know, the car rental places. Just such nice people in this world. And with the news nowadays, it looks like there's a lot of, you know, things that are negative in the world. I look at it as a lot of positive things because there's a lot of good people out there.
Steve Javy, longtime NBA official with us here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. 24 years as an NBA official, an unbelievable run. Did over 200 playoff games, 20 finals games. Steve, one thing I've always wondered, what are the hardest kinds of players to officiate? Maybe not the toughest individuals, but is it the big guy down low? Is it the guard who initiates contact? What's the hardest type of player to officiate?
Yeah, you just named two of them right there. There's no doubt, Brady. I guess it just depends, because when I was in there, when people would ask, because somebody asked me that question now, who is the toughest player? And it's tough for me to say, not being on the floor, I could guess. But when I left the floor, the two players, in my opinion, for me, the most difficult players were the smallest guy, which was Allen Iverson, because he was such an aggressive player to the basket and created so much contact that he would almost like force you to blow the whistle because he's on the ground, somebody else is on the ground, and you're saying, oh my gosh, something happened, you know, and you had to blow the whistle. And then the other one was the biggest guy, which is Shaquille O'Neal. When you have a guy like that who, you know, really doesn't even know his own strength. It's like, does that hand check bother him? Or when he's hand checking somebody, does that really? It was just so difficult when you had both of those guys. Obviously, the dichotomy, the one the smallest and one the largest, it's really kind of weird.
A number of one of the biggest storylines of this NBA season has been the relationships between the players and the officials. Technical fouls up, a lot of players that were not used to being labeled as hot-headed getting ejected, like Kevin Durant. Why is that? What is the relationship like between players and officials?
Yeah, I don't think relationships have changed that much over the years. I mean, it's always going to be this kind of contentious relationship because everybody looks at the official as, you know, he's preventing me from doing something. He's taking something away from me. He's costing me the game. I missed a shot because of him. So there's always a contentiousness, I will believe, that always has been, you know, in the past and will continue to be. This year, you know, I just think that the way I think sometimes what happens is that certain officials, what I call, take care of business. They don't allow certain players to react a certain way, and they take care of business and, you know, for a technical foul when needed. And then there's other referees that let players say what they want to say. And what happens, I think, sometimes the players get used to maybe verbalizing certain things to other referees who are not going to take this stuff. So there has to be more of a consistency, I think, within the group of officiating and the officials themselves to handle these situations, even though everyone's a different personality. You have to be able to almost like draw that line, and everybody's line's got to be almost the same. It really isn't, because their personalities are different. That, and I think the other thing is that it is a younger staff right now. There has been a turnover in the last 3, 4, 5 years. So I think it's a matter of getting to know each other, too. Because in a professional ranks, unlike the college ranks, the players are there for a number of years. We have to get to know the officials, and the officials have to get to know the players. So I think it's in the feeling out stage now for some reasons, too.
See, how much does a player or a team's reputation matter when you go into a game? Like in the NFL, this secondary has a reputation for holding, so they seem to get called a little tighter. Does that happen in the NBA? Does a player or a team's reputation kind of predate them going into a game?
Well, I think that as an official, and any official worth their salt, as they would say, you have to know tendencies, and that's tendencies of teams. The Golden State, I mean, obviously now a lot of teams are doing Golden State, Houston, shooting threes and making sure that you're able to get into position in a transition game as an official to see a three-point shot and to see any contact on the shooter. So there are tendencies, and each player has tendencies also. One might be an aggressive player down low. Another shooter, maybe he's got this move out front that maybe it's, like I say, a James Harden who tries to fool the referee by, you know, grabbing the arms or going around the pick and so on and so forth. It behooves the official to know these tendencies, that doesn't mean that he's going to say, oh, I'm going to anticipate that it's going to be a foul. But you have to be ready for that. You have to be ready for their tendencies as a team and as players. And that's all part of the professional makeup of an official, I believe.
Steve Javy, 24 years, an NBA referee with us here on the Huddle 101.3 ESPN. 200 playoff games, more than 1,500 regular season games in the bag. And what a career you had as well. Let me ask you this. Everyone wants to know this one. Which players talk the most trash to the refs?
The player who's not making a shot that night. Now, you know what? I guess there are different eras have different players, you know, who talk to trash and so on. Obviously, in our area, we had Rasheed Wallace, and he had Allen Iverson, and he had Antoine Walker, and, you know, Gary Payton and so on. And I'm sure you can see just by now, Green looks like he's the biggest trash talker out there now. He doesn't seem to keep his mouth shut too much either. But, every era has different players. And, you know, you just have to learn to try to either one handle them one way or try to get along with them, either one.
How about what creative ways will players use to get to the ref without really getting to the ref? Like when I would coach college baseball, I would yell at the catcher, and that was my way of letting the umpire know I thought he missed a call. Are players that creative, or do they just come out and out right at you?
Most of them just come right at you right now. They're not afraid. They don't like to go back door. They come right through the front door, most of them. But there are some, what they do is they think that because they don't use obscene language or they don't curse, that they shouldn't get a technical foul. So you'll have players who constantly complain every time they happen down the court. And then when you hit them with a technical foul, they go, well, I wasn't cursing. And it's like, they think they can continually, you know, and they say, well, I didn't call you for cursing. I called it for continuous complaining.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, something's got to stop here. So that's about the only way they try to go through the back door, by not cursing. But then when they find out they can get a technical for that, then they can throw the cursing in there, too.
Hey, Steve, do these superstar rules exist? Does the best player get the benefit of the doubt on calls? That's one. That's a fan conspiracy. Is that true?
It is. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, of course, I can't expect a fan or anybody who's never officiated to understand it. And then my father taught me that years ago. You can explain till you're blue in the face. The key, what referees want to do is get plays called correctly out there because that's their livelihood. That's their job. That if I don't get plays as an official, I don't move to the playoffs, or then I don't move to the next round, which is all money in my pocket and for my family's pocket, too. So people don't understand that if I favored somebody or I gave somebody a call because he was a so-called perceived superstar, then I'm doing detrimental work to myself on my behalf. So, and I think this year when you heard Kevin Durant, who is leading the league in tees, he's supposed to be a superstar. You hear LeBron James, you hear, and they're now complaining about the officials. Well, a couple times I said, well, hopefully now we can dispel this myth that the officials, you know, favor the superstars. The other thing, my boss years ago, God rest his soul, Darryl Garrison, he used to joke about it because in every generation, it's been said about these superstar calls. He would joke at the preseason meetings and say, okay, who's going to be elevated to the superstar status this year that we now have to favor? And it's true. It's like, who do you think is it? Who is a superstar? Who's not a superstar? And what happens if you had two superstars on the play? How are you going to call that?
Yeah.
So officials, they really just don't care, and I know I didn't care. If I'd perceived it to be a foul, and I wasn't right all the time, obviously, it had nothing to do with whether you were a superstar or not.
Steve, we'll get you out of here. Two questions. We talk about superstars. You've been around a bunch of them in your career. You refereed Michael Jordan's last game ever. What was that like for you? I'm sure as neutral as you have to be as an official, I'm sure that was you knew you were doing something special then.
You know, I still remember the game, and it was actually an honor to be on the court with the man, because he was also, besides being arguably the greatest player ever to play the game, he was a gentleman to the referees. That didn't mean he didn't get his technical fouls, because he was competitive, there's no doubt. But he didn't do some of the antics as these guys do nowadays. He would try to treat you with some respect, with, you know, talking to you instead of all the histrionics or coming up on you and so on. He'd try to stand there and talk with you about it. A lot of times he didn't agree, of course, and maybe, like I said, he got the technical foul. But I just remember how he treated us and how he treated the game and how much he loved the game. And it was really to officiate in his games. And it's actually, they were with the exception of sometimes when the Knicks and the Bulls got into it, some brawls, that kind of stuff. They were always fun to do. They were always fun to referee his games.
And Steve, you had LeBron at the beginning of his career, the first couple, you know, you had him for 8 or 9 years or so, but you had him at the beginning of his career too. Did you know when you saw LeBron at first that, wow, this guy's just different?
No doubt about it. I think there's a once in a generation like a LeBron or a Michael Jordan that come around, a Kobe Bryant, that you just sit there and you go, wow. I mean, this is something special, especially for a guy his size too, Brady. This guy can be a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
And what amazes me is how he just seems to keep getting better, and he just takes care of himself, his body, and so on. After 15 years, it's amazing the numbers he's putting up, and I just don't think people realize how really, really how good this guy is. He's put that team on his shoulder, Cleveland, a couple of years. Nobody else around and takes him to the finals. And he is a special, special player. There's no doubt about that.
Steve Javy, former NBA ref, 24 years in the business. Now you can hear him as ESPN's lead officiating guru and on a number of broadcasts. So, Steve, we appreciate the time. This was a lot of fun, a lot of interesting perspective we don't usually get. We'd love to do it again sometime.
Hey, Brady, I enjoyed it. Thanks so much, and enjoy the playoffs.
There you go, Steve Javy. You know what surprises me about the whole thing? Very nice guy, very soft-spoken. I never would have thought about that. An NBA ref, I thought, would have a voice like mine. And then you would ask him a question. He goes, yeah, Brady, that punk opened up his mouth and I teed him up on that. You know, I'd have a little bit of an attitude, would it not be, or
and
what?
Imagine the next life you have after 24 years of being an NBA ref. I would be the most beaten down, defeated human being I can ever imagine.
Well, he's on TV now on ESPN and ABC occasionally. So he doesn't do it every game.
Man, that just sounds like the most exhausting job, mentally especially.
I always thought I would be a good NBA ref. I really did, Brady. I'm not kidding around. No, I always thought I could do a good job because, I mean, I think the NBA refs are just so bad at their job that I actually thought I could have done a pretty decent job being an NBA ref.
That's a first.
No, I mean, seriously, they are.
Injecting himself into the story.
Well, no, I mean, that was because I'm not good enough to play, obviously, in the NBA.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but I really think NBA refereeing should have been my call, Brady. You would have been a good NBA ref, too. You're tall.
Yeah, I could have been okay. Yeah. I think you would make a good, like...
scorekeeper?
Like middle school ref.
A scoreboard operator.
I could yell at the kids. Hey, kids, come on now. What's wrong with you there? Don't give me an attitude.
They just teed up the scoreboard operator.
I might have told this story once before.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I got thrown out of a game when I was coaching 16-year-olds. I got thrown out of a game one time. And I found out afterwards that umpire had a history of being really, really short-tempered. I once found out that he threw out a 9-year-old scorekeeper at a youth league tournament.
Oh, jeez.
Because the kid kept getting the scoreboard wrong, and he was looking at the scoreboard to figure out what count it was. Like, he wasn't paying attention to the count, so he was looking at the count on the board.
No.
And, like, he would say it's 3-1 when it was really 2-2. So he threw out the scoreboard operator, who was like a 9-year-old kid.
Jeez.
I'll tell you, though, in baseball especially, scoreboard operator is important. I remember I did it a lot last year in Connecticut before the season started, and those umps would look up at me every time I was wrong. And, I mean, the look in their face would have put me 6 feet under.
Do you have to have – I know in the NFL you have to do, 10 years of college. What was the ratio to get into the NBA? Do you have to do, like, close to 10 years?
For refereeing?
Yeah. Is it close to 10 years in college basketball? I don't know. But you wouldn't think so. But there's some young guys there. There was you seem like some 30-something young guys refereeing in the NBA.
Talk about a job for people with thick skin.
I'm trying to think, what do you get more of? Ejections in baseball, technicals in the NBA – or personal misconduct, not personal misconduct, but
in hockey,
personal foul that's not really that's not a good analogy.
I would say there's more technicals, but there's also more chances.
Yeah, there's more technicals. There's no doubt about that. Referees, I think NBA refs lose their temper more than NFL or NHL or Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball though is a close second though. Especially the home plate umpire, you know what I mean? Unbelievable.
Especially when they have to keep breaking up fights.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, we're going to get back into the Red Sox. Obviously, Red Sox-Yankees, a lot happened yesterday. We'll get more into that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow, Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go! All right. Welcome back. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. You know, one reaction we didn't get. We talked about the Yankee Red Sox in many different ways, but there's one person we needed to get the reaction of. I mean, everybody's like, what did he have to say? I'm talking about Rob Gronkowski, What did Gronk have to say about the Yankees-Red Sox brawl last night? Because, you know, Gronk has a say on just about everything. He tweeted out yesterday, Sox versus Yankees brawl slash rivalry is back. The action I love to see. And then Pedro Martinez, of course, former Red Sox ace, liked what he saw from Kelly. So he put that on Twitter also. Yeah. So he just—I just wanted to tell you what you knew Gronk was. Well, what was Gronk going to write? I hate to see that. That's terrible.
Well, what's Pedro going to write?
Gronk should have tweeted that Tyler Austin should have come at him like I came at Tre'Davious
yes,
White.
Yes, that would have been better.
That's what Gronk should have said.
That would have been fantastic. I would have loved to see that.
But,
one. That would have been better.
I'll tell you, it was a hell of a night. I mean, everyone was talking about the blowout in the first game, but the only because of the final score, I think, and the fact that the Red Sox were starting their early season, put a little distance, and people are getting a little nervous in the Bronx. And boy, did they ever pay it back, especially in that first inning last night. What a game.
By the way, who has momentum right now? Red Sox win 14-1. Yankees win 10-7, but there's a brawl. I mean, what the hell is next? I mean, who's carrying the momentum? And if I'm the Yankees, I'm really, really upset about everything that's going on. I'm going to have to come up with a little bit more tonight.
I would say that I don't even put it in terms of momentum. I just would look at it and say that the Yankees need to come out in the first inning and take advantage of Rick Porcello's first inning woes. Yes. Rick Porcello has struggled in the first inning since he got, you know, all of last season and then all through spring training this year. And he's had a pretty good start to the year. But if you can get up 2-3-0 early, then you would establish the momentum. And I don't think the Yankees will do anything tonight. I really don't.
I don't either.
Oh, I completely disagree.
Really? I think they're going to wait. They're going to pick their time. But, and they're playing them again in, what, a week?
Help me think. When we were talking about retaliation and I was wrong about last year, was the Red Sox and who?
Orioles.
Yep. But that was in...
happened in Baltimore.
Right.
But...
It carried over to
Boston.
Because
Machado,
if this was later in the summer, I would say there's going to be no retaliation. But the fact that we're in April, what better time is to go after somebody right now? You know what I'm saying? You're not worried about the standings or anything like that.
And I'll tell you what, that wasn't the only brawl. I don't know if you guys saw the Nolan Arenado charge of the mound in that Padres game. That thing was violent.
And the pitcher threw the glove at him and then ran away.
You know, I have a theory on that. Do you think that, and I don't know this for a fact, are there more brawls early because pitchers are getting the better of the hitters now? Because we have not seen hitting this low in a while to start the season. Am I wrong on that? Or am I crazy on that?
One of the Boston writers said people are just sick of being cold. You know, and I, as ridiculous as that seems, I'll bet you there are a couple of them that are just not in as good a mood because they're freezing. And you know what? A 95-mile-an-hour fastball to the back hurts anyway, but I bet it really hurts when it's 38 out.
I think there's probably more fights in the dog days of August when it's 100 and you're out of it.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you're so beat up by then, you know. I guess you are a little agitated by the time August comes around.
The thing that always cracks me up about all these the bench clearing brawls or the bench clearing incidents is the bullpens. Coming in, and they're just sort of jogging and talking with each other.
Why do they have to jog into the infield and then fight? Why can't they just start fighting in the outfield? Why are they running like they're running right next to each other? And then they hit the dirt, and then boom, they hit the mound.
And pick
fighting.
An opponent as you're jogging. Yeah. Hey, Joey, you, me,
you and
right?
I, we're squaring off. I don't understand that, but I would expect full fledged brawls going on by the pitchers.
I think the Red Sox have made a conscious effort to send a message in this series. They did it in the first game with their play, and they did it in the second game to show that we're not going to be intimidated and we're not going to take any gruff. And that is good for the rivalry. It is good for baseball. Well, I don't love that Joe Kelly took two shots at Tyler Austin. I really don't think that's the way that you handle it. You get your one shot, and if you miss, then so be it. That was your chance. But I like that last year the Machado-Pedroia thing fractured this clubhouse. Pedroia was on one side. Everybody else was on the other. Farrell's on one side, too. That wasn't any good. This team at least is unified, and that's what's good to see.
Why am I wrong on this? Tell me why it's an automatic ejection if you threw it the first pitch at somebody, because I thought you have to be warned before the game starts, not a carryover from last night's game. Am I understanding?
They're going to be warned before this game.
But they haven't been warned yet, so we're just assuming they're going to be warned.
Yes, they're going to be warned before this game. Okay.
As a Sox fan, I'm thrilled we won't have to deal with Joe Kelly for like a week. Good. I'd rather not have him around.
You know, why even warn them? It's a whole new day. You know, what happened yesterday happened yesterday. It's a new day. Let's play some baseball.
Nah,
and if somebody starts up, why? Why do you have to?
You know how that goes.
But you're starting a game under the premise that something bad's going to happen, so you're going to warn them before the damn game
yes,
even
exactly.
starts.
That's exactly what we're going to do.
In tonight's case, yes.
Really?
Absolutely.
Do you remember Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman? Even after Norman changed teams and went to Washington, they were warned before the game. The referees brought them over. How is that different?
That's a little different.
How? That's a full offseason, and Norman's on a different team, and they warned him. How is that different than the next night?
But when they said, watch what you're doing, they just said, we're going to be looking at you. They didn't say first incident, you're thrown out of the game or anything like that.
But they wait. There's an 8-month difference.
No,
between
you're right.
They
you're right about that. Yeah, I understand that. I would just think, look, what happened on a Wednesday happened on a Wednesday. And now we're in the Thursday. We got two different pitchers. Hey, we could have 18 different guys in the lineup. So, you know, why are we warning people when you could have 18 different guys in the lineup? I don't know. I guess you're right, because as soon as the first one's thrown, boom, the whole fireworks are going to start all over again. Could you imagine if they weren't warned? You're opening the door for them to go ahead and retaliate.
And if I'm the Yankees, I'm not happy about the fact that they're going to be warned pregame, because Sonny Gray's in a position where he had nothing to do with any of this. And now if he throws at a Red Sox player, he's gone.
You agree?
Don't do that in the first inning.
You agree with Alex and Moncton where he says Kelly is a bum. If you're going to throw at someone, hit them the first time you try and keep it lower than the shoulders. He did keep it lower than the shoulders.
Yeah, he hit him in the back. Yeah. I don't have a problem with where he hit him, but I do have a problem with him taking two shots at it. And the coaching staffs are still salty at each other, too. Alex Cora saying that, Carlos Fables, the third base coach for the Red Sox, he got punched in the head, so they're not happy.
Right.
Cora doesn't like that Boone's staff of the Yankees was yelling at their dugout, and Boone wasn't happy after the game yesterday either.
I didn't know what to expect. I don't think they should have. You know, I mean, I thought it was a hard slide in the second, nothing remotely dirty about it. And, and then to take matters into your own hands and go hit one of our guys for that, I thought was an overreaction. And, you know, didn't think it was right.
Another angle on this. And I know you guys both said you don't think there's going to be any retaliation, but I'm just wondering.
Tonight.
But yes. I'm just wondering, first-time managers more likely to see retaliation or less likely to see retaliation? I mean, if you're first-year manager, you say, I'm going to show them. They're not, I'm top 10 games into my tenure. They're not going to pull this crap on me. Or are you saying, hey, it's my first year. It's 10 games. I'm not going to go through. I don't know, first-year managers, you're more likely to push back or you're more likely to take it. I don't know.
I think you're more likely to be aware of it. And aware of your situation and how the media perceives how you handle a situation 10 games into your tenure.
What I am really curious about.
Yeah.
And we talked with Desi Relaford about it. I said, when you've been spiked, when you've been slid and dirtied to, do you tell the pitcher, hey, throw at this guy, or does the pitcher do it on his own? I'm curious about that. But Alex Cora was a middle infielder also.
Yes.
Alex Cora is more aware of that situation than a lot of other managers. A lot of managers are former pitchers. A lot of managers are former catchers.
Right.
Right? Alex Cora is a former middle infielder.
But a first-time
wondering. Yeah. I want to know if he called for the hit. That's what I want to know. Did he say, I've been in that position. That's a dirty play. Is he more sensitive to it because he's been slid into how many thousands of times in his career that he believes he knows exactly what's dirty? I want to know if he had anything to do with it.
See, that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it was, hey, I'm a first-time manager. You're the Yankees. The hell if you're going to push me around the very first time we're going to meet. I'm not letting that happen. And I'm going to show my team and all of Boston that there's a new man in town, and I'm not going to back down to anybody. That's the attitude I would have, Rich.
Well, he's certainly conveying that towards Phil Nevin, and if anything happens tonight, it'll be with him.
But wouldn't you have that attitude?
No, but I mean, with just what you just played, Brady, with Aaron Boone, I mean, that's a guy who's in charge, but he was very measured with his word, calling it a bit of an overreaction. You know what? He's a manager. He's a ball player. You know what he wants to say. He wants to drop a couple of F-bombs and could tell him what it is.
And I do not think – Boone, I have already gotten the impression of, is that even though he's smart, even though he's well-spoken, I think that he is a guy who can be a bit moody. I don't know that it's hot-headed. No, I just think – I don't look at him as the – the friendly outward face that Cora is. Cora's always got a smile on his face, and I think he internalizes everything, whereas Boone, I think, is a lot more likely to put that scowl out publicly.
If this was – look, I wouldn't put it past Boone to, you know, just also say, hey, this is my first go-around. I'm not letting you push me around either. I'm going to show you what I got for you.
Well, it's funny because I always thought of Joe Girardi as a guy who's ready to rip everyone's head off.
Yes.
You know, and yet he became a lot more – measured as he got older.
If this was Joe Girardi's first year, I would have no doubt that he was going to come back. You see, that you got to depend, you know, who the manager is. But I think being a first-year manager means that they're going to push back a little bit more. That's why I think we're going to see some retaliation. So we'll see what happens. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, bad news for the New York Giants in the offseason and a really classy move by Robert Kraft.
You'll want to hear this story. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow
Motels.
Arnie injured himself playing basketball. Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Joe just flying on by
today.
I'll say. I'm ready to roll. Ready for your game tonight, Brady?
Yes, ready.
Playoff game.
I'm very ready.
Do you want to take a call first?
Yeah, we can take a call.
All right, who's on the line?
Dave in Essex.
Dave in Essex, you're on 101.3 ESPN. What's going on, Dave?
Hey, what's up, guys? Just wanted to mention about where Alex Cora, our manager's from. He's from the U, baby, so he's going to bring that swagger.
It's from the University of Miami.
I know that, yes.
Can I guess that you are from there as well?
You know it. You've seen me before with all my Canes gear on.
Yeah, do you think him being a first-year manager has anything to do with it, or that doesn't play into it at all?
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does. I think he wants to make a statement, and he did.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the call. I think you guys underestimated that. When you're doing anything for the first time, a job, you're a rookie on the basketball court in the NFL – you don't want to be pushed around. I think you're more likely to push back if you're a rookie than if you're like an 8 or 10 year veteran or something like that.
That's why you see rookies getting training camp fights.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's why, even though with a manager you're much older and you've been through, these two guys have been through the, you know, obviously Vigors are playing, I still think it's a new job for them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's like you on the basketball court.
Yes,
you realize the only hope you're making an impact is to punch people.
Yeah, start fights on that. Brady, what's going on with Landon Collins? Oh, my goodness. Uh-oh. I'm already worried. The season hasn't started. It's 5 months away.
Bad news for the Giants. Yeah, Landon Collins, star safety. He's going to be out for the duration of the offseason program. He broke his arm.
Yeah, he needs second surgery. Huh?
Yeah, he broke his arm tail end of last season. He's going to need a second surgery to make sure everything is repaired. He is as surprised as anybody about this. But, yeah, he's going to miss all of OTAs. He's going to miss everything in the summer up until training camp.
I was going to say, I usually wouldn't be worried about somebody that needed surgery and has 5 months to rest. I'm worried only because it didn't work the first time or something was wrong the first time.
A second surgery, not healing as fast as
you want. I know that. Well, does another surgery make it heal faster?
I don't know.
I'm very concerned when you have to have a second surgery because the first surgery didn't heal or something didn't go right.
Right, like Kyrie.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, exactly.
As soon
Rich.
As I heard this, I thought of Kyrie Irving. It's like, they got to pull something out of there. First thing I actually thought of is, didn't he just say, I mean, literally this week, when asked by reporters, he said it felt 100% and he's ready to go?
Yes, and he said that's why he's as surprised as anybody that he's going to have this procedure. A lot of people on our Facebook page, I put this up, said non-story, talk to me if he misses any of training camp.
Wow.
I think it's a big deal only because he is such an important part of that defense, and they've got a new defensive coordinator, and you would like to start to experiment with just being in certain places on the field. Now, the thing I hope is that even though Collins won't be able to go through and do full-speed stuff with this broken arm, but if he's in a cast, I have to imagine he can at least stand in position and get a feel of where he's supposed to be on the field in certain defensive schemes, because they're talking about moving him around and doing a lot of creative things with him. I'd like for him to be able to have a feel for that as we head towards training camp.
I don't think that – I'm not as worried about that. I'm okay with that. I just want to make sure he's okay physically. 5 months to – well, not really 5 months to heal. Let's take that back. You have to be ready to go by August as far as – if you're not 100% by August – there's some serious, because you're not going to heal from, you know, August until September. So you've got April, May, and June for the most part, and then you got to get your butt in the camp. If you're not healthy by the end of June, I've got some big problems.
And the thing is, like I said, you know, he's talking about how he feels great and he's ready to go. I mean, is that exactly what he's going to say 3 months from
now?
Yes,
he will. He will obviously say. I mean, it's like Andrew Luck, who, by the way, I would bet every dollar in my pocket that he won't be starting game one for the Indianapolis Colts.
Let me write this down, because I'll take your money.
Are you serious? Yeah. I mean, this guy...
You have millions.
Let me tell you something. This is the biggest joke of... you want to talk about what this guy is going through, and, you know, I'm okay, and I went here, and this guy, he's not even throwing a football. He's throwing a Nerf football. I don't even think this guy's coming back this year. It's a big joke, but go ahead, Brady.
Breaking news, the suspension's already handed down for yesterday's incident in Fenway.
That was quick.
Joe Kelly gets 6 games and gets a fine. Tyler Austin gets 5 games and a fine. And then other fines that go out, Alex Cora fined, Phil Nevin, Yankees third base coach, fined. And this is one I hadn't thought about. Players on the disabled list who were fined for entering the field of play, CC Sabathia of the Yankees, and then Xander Bogaerts, Marco Hernandez, and Dustin Pedroia.
I was going to ask you, was Pedroia out there? I was going to say that with the injured people.
Well, Sabathia sure was. He came up behind a guy and just pushed him to the ground and then cold-cocked somebody with the back of his hand right in the face.
Yeah, that should be more of a egregious penalty. When you're not active and you're running out there to get into a fight.
That is a big penalty in the NBA. Remember, you know, guys out on the bench coming out on the floor.
But that's active players, too, that are coming into the game. You know, you can actually make a case, a court case, for somebody that's not an active guy coming out and fighting. You can make a case for something like that.
I'm a little surprised at the amount of games at the low end. I really am, because I thought, I mean, especially when you had two pretty significant incidents yesterday with the Arenado one against the Padres, too, where they would make an example of these guys and just say, all right, begin first 2 weeks of the season, this ain't happening. I'm giving you both 10 games to start.
Yeah, but it doesn't work that way, because you know these things are collectively bargained, and they go in degrees, and how many times have you been, you know, like look at Marchand. Marchand, he gets more for things because he's a repeat offender when we talk about hockey. Joe Kelly and Tyler Austin are relatively first-time offenders, at least as far as I'm remembering. So this is what happens. Kelly gets more, I think, because they know he's the one who precipitated it. They know it was intentional, and probably because he took 2 chances at it.
All right. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a surprise. Sixes.
I'm thrilled. No Joe Kelly for a week, baby. Bring it on. That's 3 less blown saves.
Brady, get to the Robert Kraft story. This is certainly a great story.
Yeah, and by the way, both those guys are appealing. Everyone's appealing their suspension, so they can play today. So,
of course.
Robert Kraft, a really good story out of Patriots Nation. So Robert Kraft sent flowers to the Humboldt Broncos broadcaster's funeral. Tyler Bieber, was a 29-year-old broadcaster for the Humboldt Broncos. He is the first of the Broncos' crash victims to be laid to rest. He was a reported diehard Patriots fan, and Robert Kraft, upon hearing this, sent flowers for the services. He also left a voicemail for Bieber's mother on Wednesday.
Very nice. Very nice thing to do. Unfortunately, I think we had another person pass away from that crash today.
The
manager. So it is now up to 16 deaths from that bus crash. So it's just absolutely heartbreaking. You see a lot of, people in the NHL doing a lot of stuff for the team. And it's good to see the NHL or hockey community, all of us, sports community, everybody rallying around what happened there and for the families.
Yeah, and a lot of people think, oh, what a horrible thing, all those kids. But there's a lot of other people that also, I mean, the bus driver died.
The coach, as you said, and the play, and
the play-by-play announcer. I remember just traveling with the Tigers last year, you had so many people that never set foot on the field as far as actually playing in a game that were involved in the team. And unfortunately, in many cases, you know, a lot of them passed in that awful situation out in Saskatchewan, including the play-by-play announcer. So,
Good for Robert Kraft for getting that done. Last story standing. Brady's going to have that for you. It's a good one. It's a local one. That's next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, Brady, what do you got for last story standing?
Well, we've mentioned this in the SportsCenter updates. It starts today. Well, it starts tonight at midnight. Starts tonight at midnight. Did you know that Middlebury, Vermont is up for Kraft Hockeyville USA for 2018? So what that means is that Memorial Sports Center in Middlebury, Vermont is in the Final Four. And what it is, $150,000 in arena upgrades for the Memorial Sports Center and an opportunity to host an NHL preseason game later this season in Middlebury. You go online, crafthockeyville.com, starting at midnight, and you can vote until 11 a.m. on Saturday, and we'll know the winner. And so if Middlebury wins, $150,000 in arena upgrades to the facility and an NHL preseason game in this area.
That's what I want is that exhibition game.
Oh,
that's
Bruins, awesome. Right? It's going to be a Bruins game.
It'll probably be either Montreal or the Bruins probably.
Can you imagine doing our show out in front before a game like that?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
They're up against Brandon, South Dakota, Clinton, New York, and Shreveport, Louisiana. Shreveport?
Yeah,
really?
The Shreveport Mugbugs are there.
That hockey hotbed.
Yeah, it is a pretty good hockey town.
This would be great. I just went on. I tried to vote, and it says you still have 6 hours.
Yeah, there you go. Brady, mistake of the day real quick.
Yeah, mistake of the day, our winner. So I'll update the leaderboard right now. So Monday's qualifier was Cody from Plattsburgh. Tuesday was Aaron from Bridport. Yesterday was Danny in Colchester. And today was Tristan in Williston. So we have a qualifier for each of the 4 days of this week. We'll get our fifth one tomorrow, and tomorrow we will know who's getting that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap thanks to Embroidery Works at Joanne's Uniforms.
All right.
We'll screw it up. We'll have a lot of screw-ups tomorrow because it's Friday.
Of course. Right. Of course. Brady, we want to thank intern who?
Intern Nathan.
Oh, he was here today. I didn't even notice that.
Oh,
wow.
He was.
I was for Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champlain Valley game night coming up next. It's going to be a short one. We're in summertime hours, so stick around for that right here on 101.3 ESPN.